opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production. You are now listening to The Crunch Zone, broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world, Louisville, Kentucky. This is Mike Lindsay, also known as Crumbs Revenge, and I'm with
Mark Linkbaker, also known as at UofL Sheriff 50.
And after a couple week hiatus, we are back to talk about basketball, talk about the bowl game, and topic of the week, cards and the pros. It's the Crunch Zone coming at you right now. All right, Mark, let's start with basketball. Big win in a historic first ever ACC game.
Yeah, it was. You know, Winston-Salem, Wake Forest, Demon Deacons. I don't know if it's revenge for 96 Sweet 16 in Minneapolis or not, but, you know, that's a start, you know, yeah. Getting them in their home court.
That was a painful loss. I still remember the 30-foot long and one that Tim Duncan got.
He walked. B.J. Flynn got fouled. And, yeah, I remember that game. I was 14 years old.
Yep.
I was at my dad's buddy's house. I got out of school. I think it was like an early game. I got out of school to watch it. Maybe, I don't know. But I remember it was daylight outside. And I remember getting so angry that I literally did not watch any of the rest of the tournament at all.
Oh, bro, it is always painful when you go out, and for me in general.
In general, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm a Louisville fan. We've only won this once in my cognitive history.
That's right.
Because, you know, I was a kid in 86. Yeah. I didn't know what peanuts were.
Yeah.
And
he said, you know, peanuts with a T, folks. Go ahead.
But you know what I mean? Like, I've my whole history of watching NCAA basketball until 2013 was Louisville getting eliminated,
right,
or not making it to the NCAA tournament. So I was well equipped with losing in the NCAA tournament, but that particular loss,
it was,
I think, maybe stung.
Louisville
more than,
was winning, you know, a good bit of that game.
Yeah.
They, you know, that 3-point play at the end kind of took the lead away for good because it was happening in the final minutes. Well, they didn't have Tim Duncan, but they did have a Mr. Thomas. Let's talk about the game a little bit.
You know, it was a really crazy game because Louisville started out, Montrezl Harrell's filling it up.
Dominating. 20 points, 6 rebounds by halftime.
Chris Jones is passing the ball.
Yeah, that's right.
Honest Mott move.
Like 8 assists in the first half,
In the first half. Honest Mott move for a period there was like David Paget. He's like doing the hub and spoke offense, which was amazing in the circle, the top of the circle. I loved it. I loved that whole first half. I was like, okay, I see how this team's going to really go well. Terry Rozier is shooting well. You know, Wayne Blackshear really wasn't like doing anything like normal. And Shaquan Aaron, all of a sudden, you know, he's very aggressive on the three spot. So I'm like loving what he's doing. So I was liking what I was seeing. And then the second half happened. The foul trouble for Terry, the foul trouble for Mango, and everything kind of fell apart, but Chris Jones brought it back.
You know what I thought was really interesting in this game, which is to my memory, the first time I've ever seen Rick Pitino do this, including at Kentucky, is Rick is all about trust. And if you don't, you know, if you don't play defense, or if you're not rebounding, or if you're not just listening to whatever he says, like tie your shoe differently, he's not going to play you. Mm-hmm. So he likes to have that control. And sometimes people will rumor at the detriment of one-and-done five-star players that Rick's not going to trust you. If you do bad, you're going to sit on the bench. You'll never be able to play through your mistakes and go pro. Well, he played the whole tribe, the whole game.
He played
everybody. And he let – at one point, it was a crucial part of the game where we were even losing, I think, in the second half, and he had three freshmen on the court. I've never seen him do that, and I know he's never afraid to reinvent himself a little bit. But I think he's probably just feeling the effects of we need a bench by the tournament to be successful, and the only way these guys are going to get better in a game is to play them.
Well, I think also when it comes down to it is the ACC, the first two games of your ACC slate are really kind of maybe your easiest two games of the entire deal. So if you're going to experiment with something, you're going to do it against Wake Forest and then against Clemson later. So I think part of that was that. And then I think
– well, but also – road Western Kentucky.
Well, yeah, Rode Western.
Didn't even play Shaquan.
No, didn't play Shaquan Aaron. I think you're right.
Or a lot of the freshmen. It was a big deal. It was something that really stuck out. But go ahead.
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of it is trying to find a five man. You know, I think he knew what he was going to get out of Chris Jones. I think he sat down with Chris. I think the flop benching thing, I think the flop part of that is kind of an excuse to reach Chris. I think Brick Pitino knew that Louisville was going to lose at some point, and at that point in time, he knew he was going to have to sit down with Chris and say, look, buddy, you got to change, or we're going to lose more of these games. Because it's hard to go to your point guard and say, hey, I need you to change the way you're playing if you're 12-0. You know, it's hard to do that. But, like, after a loss, you can say, okay, this is why we lost this game. There's going to be more games like this. I need you to be this way. I need you to come with a positive mindset. And I think that was came with that. But then the five spot, man, like Chinanu Onuwaku, 3 fouls in 1 minute, that cannot happen. I know he just turned 18, but he's got to listen to his coach. Rick Pitino said he's only giving him 40% effort right now in practice. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, and you know, just watching him from the beginning of the year, he was getting all the rebounds, and he had the absolute best outlet pass I've ever seen.
He still does.
In a Louisville uniform. Yeah. Now, Wes Unseld was much better, but I wasn't alive to watch him play live. But I've seen him on video. So, like, in person, that's the best I've seen. Now the guy is somehow forgotten how to rebound, and we're not getting these outlet passes.
He's playing like the brother of an NBA player. And, you know, we had Chris Smith, and he was J.R. Smith, and Chris was
Troy
fine.
Troy Jackson.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these guys that are brothers of NBA players, they mail it in because they don't have the urgency to make it because their family's okay.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Chinanu Onuwaku has enough ability to go and make it on his own and not ride his brother's coattails. But he's acting like kind of, I want to say, a spoon-fed kid right now. Mm-hmm. And if you ever hear Terry Rozier talk, he talks about Cleveland State and some of these other hungry teams. He goes, these guys are not spoon-fed. He says, I'm not spoon-fed. Terry Rozier, talking about himself, he prides himself on going out and earning everything like a hungry dog. And right now, Chinanu Onuwaku doesn't have that hunger, and that's holding this team back. It's holding his development back. And I think when Rick Pitino and his players talk about maturity, I think a lot of it's talking about Nanu right now and not necessarily Chris Jones, which I think Chris has taken a lot of the brunt of the criticism. But this is a young team, and Nanu is young.
Yeah.
And some of these guys are not from the United States, and they don't understand the stakes. Nanu is, and he understands the stakes, but some of these other players don't.
Yeah, and you know, to your point of being a young team, you know, you need – we've had so much experience in clutch situations that these guys actually have to lose some of these for it to hurt hard, you know, bad enough to take that to practice, and then, you know, you earn your stripes. And I think, unfortunately, you know, we're going to have some more of that, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. I really don't think that. We may not be a 1 or 2 seed like we're projected right now once we get through a very difficult slate through the ACC. Mm-hmm. Virginia's going to be miserable to play them twice. Duke's going to be really hard to beat. North Carolina, you know, hell, the best game they had last year was against Louisville, I think, when Marcus Page went off. So, I mean, there's so many difficult games that, you know, Miami should have beat perhaps even Virginia. You know, Miami's
and you got to play Virginia twice.
Right. So there's just a lot of difficulty in the schedule that they're going to have to take their lumps. And just me as a fan talking to fans, it's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing at all. And this team was never going to go undefeated. It's not going to go undefeated in the ACC. And the big thing is can Louisville win 6 in a row in conference? Because if they can win 6 in a row at any point during the conference schedule, you know that they can win a national championship. Mm-hmm. They don't have to go in and blow the doors off everybody and beat Duke and beat Carolina. If they lose to Duke, they lose to Carolina, they lose to Miami or Virginia, it's not the end of the world. It's a learning moment. As long as they're practicing hard, playing hard, giving the effort that Coach Pitino wants, that's what he cares about.
Right.
Can they learn from their down moments? Can Chris Jones stay at an even keel and not implode? I really liked what he did in there. And, you know, he only took 3 shots in the first half. He took 0 3-pointers against Wake Forest. I don't think that he's going to go through the entire season without taking a 3 because he's a really good set shooter. When people give him the ball and a set shot, he's excellent.
Right.
when he shoots
off, he's
one
of our better shooters. In fact, in the NCAA tournament last year, if you go back, look statistically.
But if you, but when he shoots off the dribble from deep, it's not a good, it's not a very good percentage. I would hate to see what the breakdown would be, but I would bet that it would be significantly worse off the dribble than it's
and
from a set
Chris,
shot.
One thing that he has to me, and I kind of mentioned this last night in the Twitter sphere, is the best thing about Chris Jones is he has no fear, and the worst thing about Chris Jones is that he has no fear. And last night we got the best version of the no fear element. So you don't want him playing the hero ball that you've heard people talk about with his no fear. You want him, you basically want him to rise to the occasion. And I think last night when the game was getting close, so maybe not last night, sorry, it's a podcast, but against Wake Forest when it was getting close, and you weren't getting any shots from Wayne Blackshear or some of these other guys, Chris Jones is not afraid to step up and shoot it, and he won't be nervous when he shoots it. He may not make it, but he won't be nervous. And inside the three-point line, he got it within space. He just made sure Louisville basketball was going to get the points they needed to get that win.
Absolutely. And the assists that he got, the eight that he got in the first half, allowed him to get more space on that shot than he would have had he been taking all these other shots like he has in the past. The passing part of his game really, really elevated his shooting part of his game. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where maybe the light comes on for Chris Jones early in January, which if that happens, fantastic. The other person that needs the light to come on offensively, if Louisville's going to really make a run, is Giannis. Because Rick Pitino starting Giannis, he's an incredible passer. He showed that last night. He can defend a little bit better than he has been.
Yeah.
He needs to elevate. I think part of it is he doesn't want to foul. He doesn't want to get up in the air and foul. I think he wants to defend from the floor, which he needs to learn timing and things like that. And he needs to get deeper into his defense and stuff like that. But if he can, from the hub and spoke, be a threat to shoot,
it'd be good if you get a free throw line jumper from that.
And he's 7 of 10 from the foul line. If you watch him in warm-ups, he's got a very nice shot.
He's good offensively, but I'm not – you know, we know how skinny he is. Mm-hmm. He really gets shoved all over the place.
He does. He gets shoved.
The ball has to come to him, and if he gets it, there really is like a 35% chance that someone's just going to take the ball right out of his hands.
I agree.
And that's the only thing that I'm bummed about, and it's not his fault because he'll gain weight. He's a freshman.
He'll gain weight, strength, and
in the tournament, like to be a national champion, I think that's the part that's going to be difficult for Anas to overcome by then.
Well, I wonder if Pitino will live with it for a while, you know, and develop his game and see if the awareness aspect can wear that 35% down to 15%, you know, because some of it's awareness, you know, some not all of it's strength.
Yeah.
A lot of it is Anas is taller than folks. Go grab the ball, secure it.
Yeah,
get it to Chris Jones or Terry Rozier. Let them take the ball at the floor. Some of it's awareness, and when you and I think he's going to have three centers. He's going to have Mango. He's going to have Nanu. He's going to have Giannis. I don't see Mott's really doing much here. I know he had a little bit of an injury, but you know he's not really in the rotation at all. He's not even getting a thought at this moment. So probably have to wait a year for him. But he's probably going to almost like a running back in football. Whoever's hot, roll with them.
Yeah.
And if Giannis can grab some rebounds, block some shots, make a couple slick passes, and then develop that offensive game where he knows that, hey, I'm open, I got to shoot this ball, then Louisville can really, really, really go another step.
And that, you know, we'll just hope, you know, that can happen. Because, I mean, even people were talking about why didn't we see Anas more during Kentucky. And the only thing I could think of was there was a tie-up where Carl Towns pretty much threw Chinanu onto the ground.
Right.
And Chinanu is about 240 pounds.
He's about 40 pounds heavier.
Yeah. And so there's no – Anas had no business elbowing around with Kentucky's front line. He would not have been successful at all in there. I really don't think so.
Well, Anas's defense isn't where it needs to be.
And Kentucky's front court defense is excellent.
And it was one of the most defensive games you'll ever see.
Yeah.
And we can talk about the Kentucky game a little bit if you want to. I thought Louisville did – everything that they needed to do on defense to win. They just didn't hit enough shots. They hurried shots.
Yeah.
Well, and that's frustrating because you get open looks and guys are hurrying shots that they normally
We won't get into it too much just because we've moved on. It was painful.
Right.
But, you know, obviously you have to be a little encouraged that if you can shoot 25%, hang with the greatest basketball team that has ever played in the history
ever
of
been
the
assembled.
World.
Oh, my God.
Then obviously
oh,
you,
hell.
Yeah, then you have potential by the end of the season to do something special. And I think – And this is where Rick makes his money. We always do terrible. We lose to Kentucky. Part of that is because of the trust model that Rick has. If you're not good, I don't trust you yet. And there were things that we needed that he would not use during the game, including Shaquan a little bit more. Let him just throw a few threes up. Now he said, screw it, I'm playing them all.
Yeah.
In the Wake Forest, we could have easily lost that game. They started taking the lead, and he let all the freshmen play through the mistakes. And I've never seen Rick do that. So I think that's him learning, because he always kind of chokes and panics during that Kentucky game, like when Rock tore his ACL. And Gordy Jang steps on a ball during warm-up and sprains an ankle.
There's been so many weird
moments. So instead of Steven Van Treese, he makes Mike Mara the power forward against Josh Harrelson.
Which is the weirdest thing I've ever heard
of. Got dunked on all over the whole game. And the body to put in there at that point at power forward would have been Steven Van Treese. So he didn't trust Van Treese yet. So he trusted Mara, but he made him a power forward. Did not work out. Yeah. You know. So
go figure.
So being in December is really a bad time to play Kentucky if you're a Louisville fan, because Rick doesn't trust anyone yet. So his team's just not ready to play a system where they're all NBA almost ready, and they're all ready to, and they're all out there playing the whole game. You know, where he's got weapons he's not using because he didn't trust him yet. Hopefully, this is growth that we've seen out of Pitino, because more out of necessity. I mean, we need a bench, so they need to play and they need to get better.
He even played Anton Gill a lot of minutes against Wake Forest, and we haven't seen a lot of Anton. And if you look at steals per minute, Anton's one of the best on the team. He's a very, very good steal guy. He's also a very high foul guy.
Yeah.
So those things kind of go hand in hand.
It's funny because he's got slow feet. He's not a good on-the-ball defender at all, but I guess he knows how to he just got good instincts,
right.
You know?
And yeah, I think he does, but then
and
also
Luke Hancock was like that.
Luke Hancock, Luke got a whole bunch of steals.
Tons of steals, not a good on-the-ball defender.
Yeah, and there was a center, I forget. I think Gorgie actually had a lot of steals as well. Anyway, but I look for that, and then also the Shaquan Aaron Wayne Blackshear thing I think is going to be the most interesting thing that happens over the next 2 weeks, because Wayne Blackshear right now at the small forward spot, he's too often just disappearing. And, you know, he played 20 minutes last night against Wake Forest, only took three shots, had one rebound. Yeah. That's a senior doing that. And if you think about Rick Pitino and his classic teams, the Francisco Garcias, the Terrence Williams, the Luke Hancocks, they're real agitators. They stir the offense up. Wayne Blackshear as a 20-minute 3.1 rebound guy, that's a stagnator of the offense. And how long will Rick Pitino tolerate that when he's not getting anything out of the five?
Yeah.
Tolerate that. It's one thing if you're getting some production out of the five. You can have a dead spot somewhere on offense. And that's happened a lot in Rick Pitino's tenure at Louisville, where one spot's just not given anything but defense.
Yeah.
Well, if you can't have two of those, especially if Terry Rozier is getting into foul trouble, which is rare for Terry. But
there was a lot of fouls being called at Wake last night. Even Rick kind of touched on it, just saying, "Well, we didn't have the whistle, but you don't usually get those on the road,
right?" You know, but you're gonna have games like that. You're gonna have weird stuff happen. So with Shaquan Aaron, he has no fear. He said that sometimes the worst thing a ball player can have is the fear of failure, and he said, and Shaquan Aaron doesn't have that. And then in the same sentence, a sentence later, talks about Wayne Blackshear and is talking about how he needs to get dynamite in his butt.
Yeah.
Everybody likes Wayne. Wayne is a really great guy, good interview, you know, always very fair with everybody that he's talking with. His teammates love him. But is he providing the spark that he needs to do the things that he wants to do professionally?
Right.
And also, what is he doing to help this team? Wayne Blackshear is incredible when he takes the ball to the basket.
Yeah.
Where is that Wayne Blackshear?
Which he did in the final few minutes of the Kentucky game, but he had a whole game that he could have done that.
Right.
And, you know, he had a strip once and he quit doing it. Like, he went in and the big lanky seven-footers got their hands on it because they're pretty quick hands.
Mm-hmm.
And, you cannot be afraid to do it a second time. You know, once you go in there, you're going to expect mixed results.
Yeah.
Deal with them.
Especially
you
against
score,
Wake Forest.
They steal. You go to the line, mixed results.
Especially against, you know, Wake Forest team is one of the worst two-point percentage defenses in the country. One of the best three-point defenses in the country. Take it inside. You know, that's a great game plan for Chris Jones to take 0 3-pointers against one of the best three-point defenses in the country.
Yeah.
And you have Wayne Blackshear out there not taking advantage of the lane, and he's a slasher.
Right.
So you know, I like what Shaquan Aaron's doing. He's a freshman, and he's another player that I think Coach Pitino will allow to grow by baptism by fire,
yeah.
and he'll live with his defensive liabilities and maybe some of his decision-making because he does agitate the offense. He brings something to it.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to have a zero at the five, you got to have something at the one, two, three, and four.
Yeah.
And everybody's taking away Montrezl Harrell. They're not going to let Montrezl Harrell beat them. So it's got to come from the one, two, and three positions. And, you know, that's a good recipe to beat Louisville. Take away their inside game, make them beat you from outside.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think, now I do know Wayne was sick earlier in the week, everybody.
Okay.
But, you know, which certainly can affect what you're doing out there. But Rick made it enough of a point to bring up, you know, that he needs to get more out of Wayne. So obviously he was healthy enough to draw the criticism.
Yeah, he was healthy enough. And maybe Wayne's sick this game, but what about the rest of his career? You know what I mean? What about the rest of his time here at Louisville? If it looks like every other game that you've ever played, besides a handful of others, mm-hmm. you know, then this is what you are. You know what I mean? And when you have a big game like you do before the Kentucky game, and everybody's like, gosh, it would be nice to have that game
right.
against Kentucky. It's
when
because
we really, really need it.
It's because we know that you're not the type of guy who's going to carry over a great game
yeah.
into a great game. It's more of a great game, and then we'll see you next month type thing.
Well, we'll continue to keep an eye on the basketball team. The pattern the last 3 years has been very repetitive, as patterns are. That was probably the worst. That was a redundant statement.
The pattern has been repetitive.
And that pattern is...
looks up definition of
hot
pattern.
Start. The Cards have a hot start. The Cards lose to Kentucky. We want to fire Pitino. We have a bad January. We want to fire Pitino. And about mid-February, we turn it on, and then we're one of the hottest teams going into the tournament. And I have no doubt this is going to happen again this year.
Well,
we just have more new parts to actually have to figure out and who's going to be into that equation.
Well, I don't know who's saying fire Pitino because I think he's proven that he's an excellent coach.
They take their frustration.
One thing that is outside of the pattern is the crazy December, November, early season loss that nobody sees coming. Didn't happen this year. I think that is a symptom of something that's a good thing. Because normally when Louisville plays the Ohio States or the Minnesotas or the Indianas early in the year, those Big Ten schools usually beat Louisville in the December. Louisville played three of them this year and didn't fall.
Yeah.
They did lose to the number one team in the country by 8 points on its home floor.
Shooting 25%.
Okay. Shooting, I think it was actually 26, but okay. You know, a terrible percentage. If you shoot a respectable percentage, you win. I think, you know, but anyway, we'll see what happens moving forward. The ACC schedule that you have coming up after Clemson is at North Carolina versus Virginia Tech versus Duke at Pitt and then at Boston College, which is pretty much your last really – the Boston College game is like the last one you can say, okay, Louisville should win that game. Everything in between Clemson and Boston College, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And it's going to tell us – Is this team a two?
Get ready,
is it a three?
Folks.
Is it a six?
People have a tough time getting whistles in a couple of those arenas when they're not in the ACC. So
right.
being the new guy on the block, don't expect a lot of extra love.
I mean, you remember Pittsburgh. When Louisville goes to Pittsburgh at the end of the month, you know, Louisville's the first team to ever win at the Peterson Event Center. And they had like an undefeated, you know, record at this place. It was
always
a new building.
Always tough down there.
It went like 3, 4, 5 years.
Real loud place and...
Yeah,
you know, their fans get into it.
It's going to get crazy.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. This, you know, I guess you're just never going to feel like the old Big East. You can say it is. It's not. But just I think some of that just because of the history and some of the locations up in New Jersey, New York, and stuff like
DC,
that.
D.C., you know.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't have the same feel quite like that. But it's certainly big-time college basketball, and it's not the AAC. It is something that... getting used to the new fans, the new opponents, the new arenas, the new rituals, all that kind of stuff is, you know, it's a first for us.
Well, I had no idea Danny Manning was the head coach at Wake Forest until they tipped off the other
night. I knew he was Wake Forest coach, completely forgot about it until I saw him.
Right. Well, I was still kind of in Belk Bowl mode coming off that game, so I really kind of mailed in the Wake Forest research.
Yeah.
Admittedly, sometimes that happens, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow, what Danny Manning.
Were you old enough to remember the painful close loss Kansas with Danny Manning and Greg Dreiling?
No, was that like 88 or something?
86.
86.
It was, I think it was the year we actually won it. But it was, you know, they had some amazing, you know, 50-game win streak.
Sure.
And Louisville was on target to beat it, and they would look good, and they hit some buzzer shot at halftime, and you're like, that's going to hurt later in the game.
Right.
You end up losing by like 1 point. They were really good. Danny Manning was on that team. He was obviously a phenomenal college player. But anyway, yeah, I did not know. I couldn't remember that he was the coach when I saw him. He looks like he's got the makings of having a good career.
He made some great adjustments. I like what they're doing at Wake Forest. Basketball is important at Wake Forest, and I don't think they'll be down for long. But, yeah, it was clear Louisville should win that game. But, hey, last year, a 17-16 Wake Forest team beat Duke, North Carolina, and Notre Dame on that court.
Right.
So it's kind of a big deal for Louisville to go in there and win.
Well, road wins in conference go a long ways. We've learned that in the Big East. So we're
doesn't matter who they're against.
We're in a difficult conference right now, so any road win that you can steal is going to go a long way.
There are no DePauls.
Very, very few. And I tell you what. One thing that I'm discouraged about is playing Virginia on senior day, because that reminds me of when South Florida was extremely good on defense with Kyle Couric senior year, and we lost that game. This Virginia game is we don't need to talk about right now. I'm just talking ACC.
But I hate
that that's our senior night.
There are like 12 more
wars
between now
and then.
Why couldn't
it have been exciting, fast paced? It's going to be like 38-32 senior day.
Yeah, let's not worry about that game just yet, because there's a long road to hoe until then.
And being Virginia, Duke, Louisville are all in the top.
Road to hoe. Is it road to hoe or road to hoe?
It's row to hoe.
Row to hoe. I knew I said that.
Because we're farming,
wrong.
I think.
As soon as I said it, I knew I messed up.
We're not going to hoe and then fill in all the asphalt. You know, you probably have a big machine.
It's a row to hoe.
But,
my mistake.
Hoe.
The
road hoe.
It could really be a road hoe.
Mark is just back from the Belt Bowl from his road hoe show. But honestly, it's great that Louisville is in the ACC, because you get to kick the tires twice on Virginia. You get to kick the tires against Duke. We played Kentucky this year on the schedule. Kick the tires on Kentucky. Rick is getting all the notes that he needs.
Yep.
Because that's, you know, probably, you know, unless there's some weird seating situation like last year where they dropped Louisville to a four and
We won't get into it right now. You're going to get me going.
But what should be shaping up is, at least in the Elite Eight, the Louisville, Duke, Virginia, and Kentucky. And Louisville's going to be able to kick the tires on all those sumbitches before the tournament.
Sumbitches.
That's right.
Yeah. This is the difference between some of these other conferences and the ACC, is that when you get into the NCAA tournament, you know exactly who you are. You know exactly what your weaknesses are. You know exactly how you're going to be attacked, because everybody's tried you.
Yeah.
You know, you have, if you're a top-level team, you have other top-level teams who have tested you, who have made you better. And that's really what the ACC will do here. And when we get into the NCAA tournament, it's everybody for themselves.
Yeah.
But, you know, they, as a group, you know, the ACC will go into the NCAA tournament
themselves better.
Better.
Yeah.
Just like the Big East did.
Yeah.
Because of what they're able to do to each other during that time. Now, you may have a couple teams that are tournament teams miss out on the bubble because of that, but at the top, it's going to really bear out that, you know, the ACC is probably the best conference in college basketball.
All right, folks, that'll do it for basketball. Game with Clemson coming up.
9 o'clock start.
9 o'clock start for you late folks. And over the weekend, we got North Carolina on the road. Do not expect a friendly whistle. Do expect Marcus Page to come out of any shooting slump he has to drill a bunch of threes against us like last year. But that'll do it for basketball. So let's move over to the bowl game in football. Okay, so Kyle Bolin basically learned the quick trigger works against a defense like Kentucky, does not work against a much better defense like a Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Georgia.
He had 300 yards. I'm not knocking him, but.
He played well. He didn't. Louisville played. They just made so many mistakes in this game in the Belk Bowl against Georgia, and they were small errors that kind of ate up. Like, the final score was 37-14. The game was much closer than that.
It was 13 points for about 80% of the game.
It was a two-score game, and Louisville put some pressure on to try to score, and it gave Georgia some early scores. And then I think in the end, Louisville's defense gave up some of those long runs. The 82-yard bust that Nick Chubb had when Louisville's still in the game, that hurt a lot in terms of the morality and the I'm sorry.
Morale.
The morale of the team.
Not the morality, though.
Not the morality. This is my third. This is my third radio thing today, so I'm a little tired. But
hoeing roads.
I'm rowing hose. I don't know, but no, I think you know it just took a toll. Yeah. Louisville gave up the edge too much. Their tackling really kind of diminished throughout the game. They met Georgia's challenge early. They didn't have enough offensive firepower in this game to make up the difference. It would have been great if they could have run the ball. That would have helped a lot in the way of getting Devontae Parker and more involved in the ball game. But in the end, Georgia was just better. This is the only game all year that Louisville just got flat beat. And so, you know, you finish the year 9-4. Georgia's the better team. You tip the cap, and you move on to next season with a lot to learn.
And then, you know, a 9-win season with brand new coach, tons of new starters, brand new schemes, and then third-string quarterback, let's be honest.
Kyle
Bolin was not going to see a single snap all year long. So it was, to me, it reminded me a little of the Hunter Cantwell filling in at the Gator Bowl. You know, it's like, we need you, and oh, by the way, this team's really good on defense. And Georgia, you know, all year long, they were kind of a Jekyll and Hyde. They would have a WTF game against you just out of nowhere, and then they would dominate. They would completely dominate, and then that would be what would frustrate the Georgia fans is, if we can get a sustained focus effort there, you know, like we could be in the mix, and they just couldn't get it out of their players' year, but throughout the year. But they certainly brought their A game against Louisville, and Louisville did not have their A game. And so there you get a lopsided finish.
Yeah, both teams were fresh. Georgia's a very veteran team, kind of like what Louisville faced the first bowl, Belk Bowl. They went to an NC State. Georgia had three All SEC players on the offensive line, 3 out of 5 All SEC players, and you add in a Nick Chubb. They didn't need to throw the ball to beat Louisville. When Hudson Mason went out of the game, it didn't matter.
It was a non-factor.
It didn't matter at all. It was all about Georgia's defense and Georgia's running game, and the running game wore down Louisville's defense. They didn't have the I guess maybe the will or the I don't know, because it was one of the best run defenses in the country this year. And so it's one of those question marks where you're just like, how did this happen? Okay, they did it also to Clemson, who finishes the number 7 run defense in the country. And, so sometimes you just chalk it up and say, hey, look, we got beat. They were better. Don't have to play Georgia next year.
Yeah.
And we'll see. We have to have Auburn, who Georgia beat 34-7. So maybe that's a little bit better of a game. We'll see.
Yeah. Obviously, Will Muschamp is going to be defensive coordinator at Auburn. So, but ultimately, the schemes will be there, but the players may not. So, I don't think that Auburn has the defensive players that Muschamp would probably want. So, we're catching him at a good time.
Yeah, catch him
early.
As far
as Muschamp, is into the mix over there. For the game, I was bummed. But this senior class has brought so many amazing memories, and it probably goes down. They have 39 wins, I think, total as a group. So, I think that's like second best or third best all time. How can you be upset? I wanted them to win the game more than me to make me feel better as a fan. So I'm bummed for the players because I know they know how to win big games, and I know they know that they laid an egg.
Yeah, well, okay, so I was at the 2011 Belk Bowl, and I was at the 2014 Belk Bowl, and the vibes coming off the field were completely different. That 2011 team was young, hungry. They wanted to prove themselves against a veteran group, and they were absolutely deflated as they left the field. Like, I will never forget it. A lot of these guys, it was like their dog had passed away because they felt like they should win the game. Coming off the field 2014 Belk Bowl, a lot of these guys left with their heads high because they know the difference between what they started and what they finished.
Yeah.
And, the Sugar Bowls, the Russell Athletics, the 2 top 15 finishes.
Yeah, first ever Notre Dame meeting.
Yeah, but,
at Notre Dame.
There's so many accomplishments, and, this is the first really bad loss that they took, and they were in the game really kind of into the fourth quarter, but they just didn't have the offensive punch. And I think it was like a sense of accomplishment even after losing, if that makes any sense. And there's no moral victories because you can't take a moral victory out of losing to Georgia by 23.
Yeah, getting whooped.
But you understand what I mean. Like, in terms of a career thing,
yeah.
It was totally different.
Well, they shut down the Keg of Nails. You know, they shut that down. Now they don't play Cincinnati anymore in their careers.
Maybe
they never
will
lost
again.
To Kentucky. You know, so well. No, they never lost to Kentucky.
They never
That's
lost
right,
to Kentucky.
That's right, because the year we lost to Kentucky, it wasn't this class.
The redshirt seniors may have.
Yeah, redshirt seniors may have. But
they didn't play.
They have they've left so much joy and happiness behind that we hope that the new blood coming up behind can match it. You know, I mean, that's all we can hope. Like I said, I hated it for the players. I really did. I think defensively, you know, I think I don't understand, you know, why the run game became so difficult. I don't think that they had NFL-itis. Because, you know, we're now a program that actually produces a lot of NFL players. We'll get into that in another segment coming up. But, you know, I don't think they had that. I think Georgia just was the better team that day. Mm-hmm. And that can happen any given Saturday.
Yeah, Louisville to beat Georgia needed to be hot. And because they were playing a third-string quarterback, they were playing Georgia.
Yeah, Dyer's not eligible.
Dyer wasn't available. You know, they needed to play one of their best games to beat Georgia. I think Georgia played one of its best games to beat Louisville, and we saw what happens when Louisville plays kind of mediocre and Georgia plays really well.
It's a team that could take advantage of that.
Louisville was going to have trouble beating Louisville or beating Georgia on its best day. So, you know, I thought that they'd come in primed based on the last two bowl performances that they had. This is a new staff. They may have new goals. In terms of their preparation, I don't know. But it just didn't look like a sharp team to me. And, you know, like some of the other sharp performances that Louisville had during the year. And you know what? They got beat. And that's college football. And it's the way it is sometimes. And you know what? We move on to the offseason. Signing day, NFL draft, spring football, all that great stuff. And it's going to be a big run-up to the Peach Bowl Chick-fil-A Classic in the preseason to face Auburn in September on Labor Day. Yeah. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
And you know, we have to tuck our tails in the bowl season, saying sorry ACC, we didn't deliver, but
we
can be comforted by the fact that the ACC, in at least in the bowl games that matter the most, had a good showing.
I would rather play Oklahoma. See what,
yeah,
you know what they did.
Yeah, they got rolled by Clemson. So thank you, Clemson. Georgia Tech beats up on at one point playoff contender Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Georgia Tech. Also, thank you, Georgia Tech, for beating Georgia for us. Notre Dame takes down not ACC, but cousin takes down LSU. Thank you, Notre Dame. We beat Notre Dame.
Yeah, we beat
Notre Dame. So we were in the mix. We just weren't the story this year, and that's okay because Louisville's been the story for a couple years. We've had a lot of famous guys move off to the NFL and are making their name out there with Teddy and Preston and all the guys. So I mean, every year is going to be a little different. Not even Florida can maintain success as we've learned.
True.
So it's difficult in college football. You have up and down seasons, and we're just going to have to see what happens. You know, between now and next year, these newcomers, these transfers, who the next guys are up. You know, we're going to talk about in the next segment about some of the guys moving on, but I think Louisville football is going to be in great hands. We're just going to have to adjust from a lot of wonderful players that are leaving.
Yeah, legacy. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, the legacy. It was really cool to see Teddy Bridgewater on the field as all the players walked off. They all gave Teddy a big hug before they went into the tunnel because he was a part of that group. You know, he left early to go to the NFL along with Calvin Pryor. But that he's a part of the group that just left. That 2011 class, the 2010 class, those guys went through a lot together. I remember the first time in Charlotte, Teddy got destroyed in the Belk Bowl against NC State. It was one of the most brutal beatings I've seen by a quarterback ever. And the offensive line that protected him in that game were freshmen, and they left as seniors. And I just think that, yeah, I think the legacy that they have on the field and what they're going to do in the NFL is going to be a really, really great to watch.
All right. Well, folks, that'll do it for the bowl game. Sorry we lost. Don't blame us. We had nothing to do with it. But now we're going to move into our topic of the week, which is cards in the pros.
Topic of the week.
Okay, so we can break this down on most recent news. We now have a list of folks that we know are going pro and we know are coming back.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you know, unless there's any surprises, we know that Jerod Holloman is going pro. He announced that a couple weeks ago after he won the Thorpe Award.
Early entry.
Charles Gaines is going pro. It's not a public thing. But yeah, I mean, everybody.
He graduated.
He graduated. He has his degree. He's played really well. It's time for him to move on. He's a senior. He's technically a junior.
Well,
he's a redshirt. Yeah. So anyway, would have rather had him that year anyway, rather than have him on a redshirt that year. But needless to say, and then James Sample. So Louisville's gonna
bummed about Sample.
It's going to be the third safety.
I was really
though.
Liking him.
It'll be the third early entrant at the safety position out of the University of Louisville the past two seasons.
Yeah.
So that says a lot when you're putting that many players in that feel that comfortable. And that, let's be honest, they're both getting drafted. Jerod Holloman, the Jim Thorpe Award winner, and James Sample, who's probably a better pro safety prospect than Jerod.
Yeah, I think Louisville fans all know that Jerod Holloman had all the interceptions. But it was Sample actually had all the tackles.
Yeah, Sample had all the tackles. Sample contained the
edge. I think he led the team in tackles, actually.
He did. He had 90, and he led the team. So it's going to be really kind of interesting to see who kind of fills in, steps up. We'll go through all that as we go through the spring and the recruiting cycle. But, yeah, I mean, think about this. You're a recruit, and Ty Grantham just won the Thorpe Award, and that spot's open now.
Yeah.
And it's the third safety in 2 years that's going to go pro early.
Right.
So what does that say? And then you got Charles Gaines over there at the corner spot. He's going to go early. He'll get drafted. All three of the early entry guys will get drafted. And Sheldon Rankins has decided to stay. That's huge news. Because he was probably a fourth or fifth round guy that he's going to play into the first, second, third rounds of next year. And then also James Burgess has decided to return. It was a big goal of his to leave. I think he didn't like the information that
he needs to come back. I love him as a linebacker, but you know I don't see him as an NFL guy yet. So I'm glad he decided, because people make bad decisions, folks.
Sometimes
people make bad decisions. They go, they fail, and they're stuck in limbo. Neither spot.
I like James's game for the NFL eventually, but the main reason why
Burgess.
James Burgess. Excuse me. The reason why I really feel like he needed a return more than anything is because he really spent a lot of the year injured, playing through injury, and you can see that kind of on tape when he's tackling. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the same pop in some of his tackles in the latter half of the season because of that. And I think if you're James Burgess, you want to go into the combine healthy. And he works so hard. I mean, he's one of the hardest workers that we have. And so I want to see him give it the best shot possible to make the NFL and make an impact on an NFL team like so many other Louisville players are doing. So there was a time there coming out of Craig Thorpe and early Charlie when he was replenishing the roster that no Louisville players were going to the NFL.
Right.
And so the Petrino guard was starting to fizzle out. And there was going to be a period where a lull, where it was almost like nothing was happening.
Right.
So now it's kind of like a changing of the guard from the old guard of the Will Gays, the Kerry Rhodes, the Amobi Okoyes. And a lot of these guys are still playing for a couple more years. And the new guard, the Teddy Bridgewaters, the Marcus Smiths, the Calvin Pryors, that are going to make huge impacts. And the team that won the Sugar Bowl, when we go back and look in the end and how many of these guys actually play pro football, at least one game in the pros, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be
big number. It's going to rival the 2004 team.
Yes, maybe even more.
That'd be incredible.
Yeah, and because you're talking about, like, you know, Roy Filon dressed, Brandon Dunn dressed for a game, Sonoris Perry played in every game for the Chicago Bears. You know, the New York Jets had four Louisville Cardinals this year. There's just so many guys that are in the NFL that really are kind of surprising that they're in the league.
And difference makers.
Like
you had one play where William Gay had a pick six off a pass that was going to Harry Douglas, who in that game had over 100 yards receiving. And then, you know, you have Preston Brown finishing probably in the top five of the Rookie of the Year. I'd be really surprised if he's not on
He'll be
rookie
in the top
team.
Five, yeah.
And then you got a really strong finish when Teddy gets the ball you know, when they started 1-3 at the Vikings, and you know, he finishes 6-6, I think.
7-6.
7-6 as a rookie, and he could be up for he probably won't win offensive rookie of the year, especially with Odell Beckham just going ham on the rest of the year.
You never know, maybe. But he's a quarterback.
He could be a divisional, you know, rookie of the year or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, they're difference makers that are out there. Eric Wood blowing up Clay Matthews on Vimeo for everyone to enjoy. Sorry, not Vimeo, but Vine. Somebody has that blow up. You know, these are all players that aren't just showing up. They're the guys that you'll hear brought up on the Sports Center. So it is a great time to be a Cardinal fan. But with that, you have to understand that when they go, you're always at risk that the next line of folks, just because they were just as talented in high school, even doesn't mean that they're going to turn into the pros that these guys have. So that's all kind of done in between the lines. You know, you show up, you work hard, you listen to coach, you hit the gym, and you see what happens. And not everyone progresses at the same rate. So hopefully, you know, that's what we're going to be seeing next year. But I'm so excited to see. I mean, we could have maybe up to 9.
You could have a bunch. I mean, I talked to Jake Smith. He's been invited to several All-Star games. He chose the one in Charleston. It wasn't the NFLPA Bowl, but he was invited to that one. I'm trying to remember the name of the one that he's been invited to. But he got invited to multiples, which is a good sign for your draft prospects. He'll probably get invited to the combine, and I expect him to get drafted. I also think Gerald Christian has been invited to a couple All-Star games. I don't know which game he decided on, but I expect Gerald to get drafted. And then you got people guys. Like
Dominique Brown was invited to a bunch of them.
He's an East-West guy, and he didn't hardly play at all.
Didn't really use him
this year. And you got Kai De La Cruz and BJ DeBose. I think BJ has better prospects at getting into the league than Kai does.
Yeah. Do you think there's any chance that For any invite to any possible camp for Lorenzo Maldon?
I was like, are you serious?
We haven't brought his name up yet. I was getting worried.
Well, I'm just going down the roster I'm reading it. But yeah, you know, I like BJ's BJ DeBose's prospects at becoming getting into a camp more than anybody. But
and if you remember, BJ DeBose is one of the points of reference in the famous get on the train speech. That was part of the pre-media day for Mr. Bedford, was BJ bringing up BJ DeBose directly. Go ahead.
But as you mentioned and asked for, Lorenzo Maldon has been invited to the most prestigious Senior Bowl. And you know, I think Lorenzo's going to go in there. They're going to really like what they see. I would be shocked if he's not a top first three round selection.
Athletic, the character.
Yes, because he's perfect everything. For the NFL. Yeah. I mean, he's perfect. Jamon Brown is an East-West Shrine guy. He has also been invited to the combine. Jamon Brown will be drafted in the NFL. John Miller, I expect he's a.
They're going to love John Miller. When people don't know about John Miller yet, they're going to know.
They're going to love him and he may be like a fourth, fifth, sixth guy type of round. But when he gets into camp, they're going to see how strong he is. Mm-hmm. They're going to see how dependable he is. They're going to see how coachable he is.
They can see his feet.
And he's very fast, very mobile. John Miller makes an NFL team next year. Write that down.
John Miller, I think, is going to have a long career, is what I think. He doesn't get hurt either.
And, well, you know, he had a couple ankle issues early, but that happens when you're playing the offensive line.
Yeah, I'm talking about like an injury, like major injury.
And then you got guys like, Deontres Mount and Terrell Floyd. Mount's another guy. He's a little bit skinnier than Lorenzo Maldon, but he's got length. He's got speed. Mm-hmm. I think he'll
Brandon Johnson type from U of L back in the
day. I think he'll make a camp. I don't know if he'll make a team. I expect a practice squad or better for Deontres Mount. I think he'll be a part of an organization. Terrell Floyd's a very physical player. Mm-hmm. I like what he could bring to an NFL team. He only had one pick this year, which is kind of uncharacteristic.
It's because Holloman took them all.
But I think when he is given the opportunity, he'll have an opportunity to make a team. And then, you know, the last three guys that I'll mention are real wide-varying guys, but Devontae Parker will be a first-round pick, absolutely. Yeah.
I think he'll
write it down.
He'll be in the pros.
Yeah, he'll be in the pros. Yeah. He'll be a top 15
pick. Let's speak generally. I think he'll go pro.
And then Michael Dyer. I'm curious to see where his stock is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's see here. A troubled guy that sometimes works hard.
Yeah. Maybe he didn't take care of his business.
That was total NFL talent, but
maybe he doesn't even love football.
I don't think he does. I think he's worn out.
Maybe. And that happens.
And if I was a running back, I'd probably be worn the hell out too.
Absolutely.
I mean, you just get, I would be like, ow, that hurts. Like every time I ran through the line when all 10 defenders crush you at once.
Right. Well, like, and then the last guy, I don't know if he'll be drafted, but I do think he'll be in a mini camp. And I think you can probably guess which one it will be, is Eli Rogers. I think he'll get picked up undrafted free agent by the Minnesota Vikings to be test drive, the slot position there for Teddy. Because if you can get a guy like Eli Rogers, and even if it's on a practice squad with Teddy, I mean, his outlook on life is just, he's his best friend. He's a reliable. He could turn into a Wes Welker type guy because he does have elite East-West speed. He's not a great top-end guy. He's got great hands. Yeah. Teddy knows him.
He's won ball games. You could totally see the difference in Eli once Teddy was gone. I mean, it's the first time in his lifetime that Teddy really wasn't throwing it to him. You know,
Eli had similar statistics than he has had the previous 3 years, just with a few less touchdowns. So I think Eli has really come along. You know, in his progression as a player, he just didn't have Teddy this year to throw him the ball, but he did have similar statistics. So let's just count them up real quick. The three guys that are leaving early, I believe, will be drafted. Yeah. And then you have Devontae Parker, who will be drafted.
Four.
I'm on the fence on Deontrez Mount and Terrell Floyd, but I think one of the two.
Okay.
I do think Jamon Brown and John Miller will be drafted.
Okay.
Lorenzo Malden will definitely be drafted.
Okay.
Gerald Christian, maybe. Jake Smith, I think, will.
Okay.
So how many was that?
Well, I think it's nine with two sharing a spot, and that's Floyd and Mount.
So nine with a potential of 11, potentially, which would be enormous.
Yeah.
If you can talk about, you had 11 players drafted in the NFL in 1 year.
And then you go back and you look at their stars, and there's just not a lot of stars.
There's just not a lot of
two stars. You know?
It's funny.
Eli was a four, I think. But most of those guys, just not a lot of stars. Just go in, work your ass off, make your own future. And this isn't just football, folks. This is whatever you're doing right now. Everyone's got the chance. But, you know, watching TV and eating pizza is cool, too. I like doing that myself.
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about stars and ratings and things. So, like, the NFL draft, it loves its prototype, but the NFL loves its production.
Yeah.
It's kind of like stars. It's like the guys who make the star ratings and everything. They love their traditional power program, high school program. They love their traditional size of athlete and speed. And they also love the traditional program that the player's committed to.
Right.
If those three things match up, then it equals a five-star player, but that doesn't necessarily matter. So when you get into the college ranks, that's how you get a Central Michigan player who's the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, is because he probably didn't come from a traditional program. He didn't go to a traditional program, and he didn't have maybe prototypical size when he came out of high school. In the NFL, they want players who can produce, and they don't care where they come from. And so it's kind of a lot of fun to always match up. When they had the Super Bowl, see how many players, you know, what their highest ranking was. And the guy was Super Bowl MVP last year, forget his name, but he was a five-star, like, all-world recruit. But that's not necessarily how it has trended over time.
Yeah.
A lot of times these guys are two-, three-star guys that, like Deion Branch. He was a three-star wide receiver out of JUCO.
Eric Wood was a really good two-star tight end out of high school.
It's the highest-paid center in the league. So...
Yeah, so it's just going to be exciting because Bobby Petrino knows what he's doing and with these guys. And so you get a lot of guys, like we have 1,000 quarterbacks. We know one recently has decided. He's already at a community college, I think. Which one was
Tyler Brugman.
Yeah, Brugman, who I thought was just coming in to be tutored for coaching, right?
I believe that was the case, but I think maybe he changed his mind, decided that he wants to take advantage of the time that he has to play.
Yeah.
Why not? His prerogative.
But Petrino knows body types, athlete types, and that's why he talks Michael Bush to being a running back. That's why he talked Renardo Foster from a tight end to a lineman. Same with Eric Wood. So, we're seeing a lot of DBs and athletes and running backs that are coming in. We have like 5 running backs on this class roster or something ridiculous. But the reality is they're not all going to play running back. Some are going to be playing wide receivers. Some of them are going to be moving to defense. And
some guys will turn into linebacker. At Auburn, Carlos Dansby came to Auburn as a skinny wide receiver and ends up being an all pro linebacker.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. I mean, sometimes you get stories like that. So
yeah, so Bobby, obviously, we know, and with the loyal following he has in the pros from former players, not the Atlanta Falcons, but everyone else, you know, believes in Bobby, and that's why you're getting Jimmy Smith from the NFL saying, "I want my son to play for Bobby." It's like he knows what he's doing. So, you know, we're just going to have a lot of turnover. We're going to enjoy Sunday a lot more next year than we did this year. Mm-hmm. But the reality is Saturdays might have a little ups and downs that we got to figure out as we get this new talent in there. But I feel I can rest easy. I know the man knows what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I think next year will be a kind of a similar year than what Louisville had this year because they have some offensive line replacement guys. You're replacing a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball, but I like the defense
like
next
seven.
Year. I like
seven
the
of
defense.
11.
I love yeah. what's coming back. But then, you know, you talk about the receiver position, the tight end position, the running back position. There's some guys that need to step up, and guys will step up, absolutely. But I'm kind of expecting right now a similar result, 9-win regular season. We'll see what happens with the matchup in the bowl game to determine, you know, what the final result is. But you never know. Bobby Petrino is a very, very good coach. And in the NFL, I don't think a lot of folks realize how many NFL scouts have visited Louisville and their practices over the past 4 or 5 months. It's been astronomical. I've never seen anything like it during my 4 years of doing this. Scouts are just crawling over Louisville's practice fields every single day in fall camp and spring practice. And during the season, they're going to practice. They're not necessarily going to the games. They want to see these guys work in practice
right.
and see what kind of motors they have in practice. And I think that's could really help the program too. Okay, the New Orleans Saints are here today, guys. You know, they're looking at P.O. Can you make sure you go hard against P.O. today?
Yeah, how much more do you get out of your practices when you got guys like that wandering around?
Exactly. And you know, I don't think there was a single practice this year that the scouts weren't in. There may have been a handful of them, but there weren't very many.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how Cards and the pros move on in our new Cardinal Red and Black come forward, but Just to talk about how, you know, we always talk about there's the people that just kind of look at the blue bloods versus the people that actually look at the production,
mm-hmm.
Like the NFL guys. Well, the guys that look at the blue bloods, like a Skip Bayless, who would tell you that Teddy Bridgewater is not going to be like
skinny legs,
just not
hands.
Accurate enough.
His pro day was terrible.
Well, the article in Vikings.com this week, you can go to Minnesota Vikings. You know, they're actually their professional organization page, Vikings.com. And it says, are 91 team records good for a rookie quarterback? Question mark.
And, well, like by every measure that Teddy had, especially to close the year, it was like one of the best rookie quarterback seasons
right?
in history.
And it's like it took them forever to really kind of come around on that. And it's so, it, yeah, it says when the dust